But right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Christian Ramirez. He's director of the Southern Border Communities Coalition. Christian, thanks so much for making time to be in our program tonight.
My pleasure. Great to be with you.
Last week, as many of our listeners are well aware, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments challenging Arizona's harsh immigration law, SB 1070. And I wonder, as we begin, Christian, maybe you could talk a little bit about what SB 1070 does, how it empowers local police officials and others in Arizona, and the significance of the case.
Well, unfortunately, SB 1070 is at the forefront of anti-immigrant legislation across the United States. This is an attempt by the government of Arizona to take control, they say, of immigration policy and enforce immigration laws because they feel that their state has been affected negatively by the influx of migrant workers, and they have the legislators in Arizona have taken it upon themselves to enforce their own interpretation of what federal immigration laws should be. Part of that interpretation is that anyone that appears to be an undocumented person will be subjected to questioning, detention, until that person is able to prove that, in fact, they are in this country with documents. This is particularly problematic for a state like Arizona, in which over 60% of the population are people of color. This has become a hot-button issue not only in Arizona but across the United States because law enforcement agencies, local law enforcement agencies that are not well-trained to determine what immigration law is have now taken it upon themselves to enforce that immigration laws. And have, in fact, created very serious problems in terms of civil and human rights in that state. And the threat, of course, now is that that type of state-driven immigration policy will be adopted by other states if the justices in the Supreme Court determine that SB 1070 will stand and will be allowed to be implemented.
Christian, can you tell us a bit about how this law has affected immigrant families and others on the ground in Arizona?
I think the main issue has been the fear-mongering in Arizona. A lot of, well, the main driving force behind this bill in Arizona were legislators that were very closely tied to extremist groups. As a matter of fact, Senator Russell Pierce, State Senator Russell Pierce from Arizona, who was the main architect of SB 1070, was recently recalled by his constituents because of alleged misconduct and because of his close ties to white supremacy organizations in that state. What we have created in Arizona is, in fact, a climate of animosity, but we have also seen something that has been very powerful to see, which is communities, not just the Latino community, not just immigrant communities, but communities of all shades and all creeds and all faiths coming together in that state to say enough. We cannot afford in our country to go back 60 years in civil rights gains. We need to hold true our values as a nation that we cannot discriminate against folks based on their color of their skin. And what we have seen, in fact, is not just folks marching and protesting, but also beginning to mend the wounds that SB 1070 has created. The main issue is emboldening a law enforcement agency that is ill-trained to enforce immigration laws. And because of that, a lot of folks in that state have been persecuted because of the color of their skin, and many immigrants have felt that they are no longer welcome in Arizona and have left the state, even those immigrants that are legally in this country. So it has been a very divisive issue in Arizona, but as I've said, it's not just the fear and the terror that communities feel, but now we have seen very powerful and very beautiful civil rights movement flourishing in Arizona that I think is perhaps the silver lining of this very contentious debate over SB 1070 in the Grand Canyon State.
It's interesting. I've heard some commentary from police chiefs and other high officials in police departments around the country who really are not favoring this legislation. They don't want this responsibility and all the, you know, the scrutiny that they come under when these immigration issues are on their agenda every day as they, you know, make traffic stops and all these other minor arrests, and then have to go through this extra legal hurdle of, you know, figuring out if this person or that person is here and legally documented.
You know, I'll tell you, I had an opportunity to meet with the sheriff of El Paso County in Texas. I've had an opportunity to meet with the police chief for the San Diego Police Department, along with other various leaders in the law enforcement community. One of the things that has been surprising to me as a human rights advocate is exactly what you're saying, that the vast majority of law enforcement, of the law enforcement community is very troubled by eroding the line between immigration enforcement and community policing. And one of the things that I've heard over and over again by folks in the law enforcement community is that the last thing that we want to do as law enforcement, they have told us, is lose the trust of communities of color, of immigrants, because if law enforcement and communities are not able to have a relationship, if they're not able to trust each other, then everybody loses. Immigrants become wary of calling police if they are victims or of a crime, or if they witness a crime. Law enforcement, therefore, does not have the ability to protect the public. And you know, time and time again, not just in the Southwest, but in my visits to other parts of the United States, I have heard from the law enforcement community the message loud and clear: we as local law enforcement should not have to deal with immigration issues. That is something that is exclusive to the state, to the federal government to enforce, and states and municipalities should not get involved, because if we get involved, then we will lose the trust of people of color and of immigrants in particular. And that's exactly the debate that's taking place in the Supreme Court, you know, that took place last week and will be taking place in the weeks to come.
We're speaking tonight with Christian Ramirez, director of the Southern Border Communities Coalition. And Christian, maybe say a little bit about your organization before we move on to some of the other aspects of immigration debate and what's before the Supreme Court with this Arizona SB 1070 law. Well, tell us about the Southern Border Communities Coalition.
Sure. The Southern Borders Community Coalition is an organization that brings together 60 community groups from San Diego, California, all the way down to Brownsville, Texas. So we are located along the U.S.-Mexico border. Our main function is to ensure that Customs and Border Protection enforces immigration law, but in doing so, that the human and civil rights of the 3 million people that call the U.S.-Mexico border home is protected. And those rights are protected, and we work very hard to make sure that enforcement in our communities does not translate into abuse. And our primary function is to advocate on behalf of the 60 communities that are part of our coalition, and to make sure that we pass humane immigration policies. And clearly, Arizona being a border state, the issue of SB 1070 is front and center, has been front and center for quite some time now.
Christian, in talking about what's at stake in the Arizona law's scrutiny by the Supreme Court, there are other states around the country that have adopted similar laws, in some cases harsher laws, in Alabama, Georgia, South Carolina, and Utah. And we've had a recent discussion in this country about a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council, which, in addition to getting a lot of publicity for its work spreading around the Stand Your Ground gun laws that originated in Florida, that it's certainly a topic that surrounds the shooting of Trayvon Martin by George Zimmerman, that case that's gotten so much publicity. It turns out that ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council, has also been pushing this harsh anti-immigration legislation like SB 1070 around the country. Do you want to say a word or two about ALEC and what their role has been around the country on this?
Well, you know, it shouldn't come to anyone's surprise that there is a coordinated attempt by the right wing of this country to not only generate fear and xenophobia against immigrants, but against people of color. It's the same message that we hear time and time again around, say, same-sex couples, against women. The fact that this is an election year, a very important election year for us in this country, that has always created a perfect storm, if you will, for folks who don't have the best interest of the majority of this country, which is to protect the civil rights of all people, regardless of your gender, regardless of your immigration status, or your color, or the color of your skin. We have seen this right-wing movement begin to move states and municipalities to adopt very harsh anti-immigrant legislation, arguing that immigrants somehow pose a threat to the fabric of the United States, which nothing can be farther from the truth. The fact, the historical fact speaks for themselves. Our country was founded on immigration. We have always had immigrants come into our country, but sadly, we have always had this anti-immigrant sentiment that now is not just focused on those who are undocumented in this country, but it's also focused on against people of color, folks like myself. I'm a U.S. citizen, and I can't tell you how many times I've been told by folks who promote these anti-immigrant legislations as telling me, go back to where you came from, go back to your country. And we cannot have folks who tell the American public that just because you have an accent that you're not familiar with, just because you eat a particular kind of food, or you have some dirt in your shoes, or your clothing is a little bit different, that somehow makes you an unwelcome person. It is time that we expose those folks who have been pushing this anti-immigrant agenda. And Arizona, Alabama, you mentioned the Mississippi, Indiana now is sort of courting with this anti-immigrant laws, are all being driven by the same folks who are launching a campaign against people of color, women, and same-sex couples. And we need to expose that, and we need to make sure that that, because it's an election year, that the politics of fear do not blind us as a nation, so that we can move forward, so we can progress as a country and not fall back and listen to those folks that really want to continue to divide the communities across the United States.
Thank you for that, Christian. And I wonder if you would tell our listeners a bit about the militarization of the U.S.-Mexico border that seems to be moving forward in the same direction, regardless of who's in the White House. And I know there's been a lot of criticism of the Obama administration for an increased number of deportations and INS raids, ICE raids, I guess they're called now, ICE raids around the country in immigrant communities and towns and apartment buildings in the middle of the night. What can you tell us about the continuing militarization and increased number of deportations we've seen around the country?
Well, you know, I think, sadly, most of us in the U.S. are very familiar with the ICE raids that have expelled over a million people since President Obama took office, which is a record in our country. Never before have we seen so many folks expelled from the United States en masse. This will be one of the most sinister chapters in our history as a nation of breaking families apart, of terrorizing communities, of leaving at least 65,000 U.S.-born children without a mom or dad because they have been deported. That is one of the saddest episodes, I think, in our nation's history. But, you know, a lot of folks don't know what's happening on the U.S.-Mexico border. The fact is that those of us that call the U.S.-Mexico border home have to deal with the largest law enforcement agency in the United States. Nearly 20,000 Border Patrol agents guard the southern border with a $12 billion budget. This is an agency that is now, as I said, the largest police agency in the U.S. and has very little oversight, has virtually no accountability, and it is very questionable the kind of training that agents receive. Many of the agents that are brought into the Border Patrol have served a couple of tours in Iraq or Afghanistan, and in essence militarizing a police force, and that has created very serious human rights violations in our country. Just last Friday, the Department of Justice closed its investigation regarding a young man, a boy really, of 15 years of age. His name was Sergio Adrián Huereca Hernández. This young boy was standing on the Mexican side of the border in the El Paso Ciudad Juarez region. Border Patrol says that the 15-year-old kid, Sergio Adrián, was throwing rocks at Border Patrol agents. A Border Patrol agent responded by shooting Sergio Adrián in the face, killing him immediately. Sergio Adrián was standing on Mexican soil. He was a Mexican national, a resident of Ciudad Juarez, and sadly, he died at the hands of Border Patrol after nearly 2 years of investigating. The Department of Justice deemed that the Border Patrol agent was acting in self-defense, and he will not be facing, the agent that is, any federal charges. But sadly, the case of young Sergio Adrián, the 15-year-old kid from Ciudad Juarez, is not the only case. Since 2010, at least 8 border residents have been killed by Border Patrol agents, and not a single case has been brought before a court. Not a single agent has faced charges. We just, about 2 weeks ago, PBS in the national broadcast made public a video, a brutal beating that occurred in the Tijuana-San Diego border region, in which a 25-year resident of San Diego, Anastasio Hernández, was about to be deported. Border Patrol argued that Mr. Hernández was being combative, that he was fighting the agents, and as a result of that, he needed to be subdued. Once we heard that Mr. Hernández was in the hospital with very serious injuries, we learned that he had a broken skull, 5 broken ribs, a broken back, and we immediately thought that this was just a brutal beating, that something terribly wrong had happened. 2 years passed. This happened in May of 2010, this terrible incident, and just PBS just about 2 weeks ago released a video in which, in a very grainy video, 12 Border Patrol agents are seen taking turns beating Anastasio Hernández, and we see in the video that, in fact, he was handcuffed, hogtied, with his face down against the pavement, and you still see the 12 agents that keep yelling at him, "Stop resisting, stop resisting," when in fact Anastasio was not resisting. In that same video, we saw the Border Patrol agent tase Mr. Hernández 5 times. All of these injuries, you know, eventually took Mr. Hernández's life and left 5 U.S.-born children behind. Ironically, Anastasio Hernández is buried in San Diego, These are 2 cases, 2 of 8 that we know of, and this is these are the kind of horror stories that we have to deal with on the U.S.-Mexico border. You know, almost every month we are dealing with these sorts of cases of folks being killed or being seriously injured by Border Patrol. And what's most amazing is that not a single agent has faced any sort of prosecution. Not a single one of these homicide cases has gone before a grand jury, much less a judge or a jury. here on the U.S.-Mexico border. Border Patrol can set up checkpoints at any time. They could board our vehicles, the public transportation system. They could enter into private property without search warrants. We could be questioned and taken off the streets without any probable cause. These are the kinds of powers that Border Patrol enjoys and have enjoyed for many years. But what we are very troubled with is the constant taking of life at the hands of Border Patrol agents. And I'll just finish with this on this point. Perhaps the most troubling case, and not because he was a U.S. citizen, but I think it's important to highlight that in Douglas, Arizona, a little bit over a year ago, a young man by the name of Carlos La Madrid, he was only 19 years old, was shot four times in the back. He was born in Douglas, Arizona. He's a resident of Douglas, Arizona, and he was killed in Douglas, Arizona by a Border Patrol agent. And we haven't heard anything around that investigation. These are the cases of brutality that we are working very hard in the Southern Borders Community Coalition to lift and to ask our members of Congress and the American public to just simply ask the Department of Justice to bring justice home. We want these families to be able to have a peace of mind, to know exactly why their loved ones were killed in this fashion. And if we don't stop it now, we are very concerned that these sorts of incidents will continue happening on the U.S.-Mexico border.
Well, thank you for that, Christian Ramirez. I have to confess my ignorance of a lot of the cases that you went through and the violence at the hands of the Border Patrol agents targeting many of these people who you described in the circumstances of their death or their beatings, and very disturbing stuff and things. We're, you know, looking back with 20 years since the Rodney King beating, yet there was a video here in this case you described tonight, and we haven't seen it. It's somehow is not being highlighted as it should be, but I'm glad you brought it to our airwaves tonight, Christian.
It's a very disturbing, well, you know, I think that this is what it's all about, getting information to the American public and have the court of public opinion judge whether or not brutality occurred in these cases. Since we don't have access to the courts, since the Department of Justice is unwilling to bring charges forward against these agents. But folks could visit our website. You know, some of these videos are very, very troubling and very, very graphic, and we, of course, ask you to take the appropriate measures to make sure that you're prepared to watch some of these videos. But if you go to our website, www.bringjusticehome.us, bringjusticehome.us, you'll see some of the videos that have attempted on multiple occasions to provide to the Department of Justice, and regretfully, the Department of Justice has not listened to our plea for justice. But in our website, you know, you'll see those videos, and you'll also have an opportunity to help us bring justice home by contacting your members of Congress and the Department of Justice in getting answers to these brutal cases.
Well, Christian, just a final question for you here as we say goodnight. Back in 2006, the country witnessed some of the largest protest demonstrations in our recent history, with hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people supporting immigrant rights and supporting responsible immigration reform law in the United States. And cities from coast to coast saw, you know, just incredibly large numbers of immigrant families and their supporters come out. That was on May Day, I believe, back in 2006. I know tomorrow is a significant day for the Occupy Wall Street movement, and they have attempted to make common cause with immigration rights as well in the protests that they have scheduled for tomorrow across the country. But apart from Occupy Wall Street, or say what you will about that, where do you think the immigrant community is right now in terms of exercising its power at the ballot box and on the streets and trying to make their presence known with all these harsh anti-immigration laws coming online in this case now before the Supreme Court?
You know, I'll tell you, it's challenging. A lot of families are, and rightfully so, afraid of coming out, of taking to the streets. You know, folks make a correlation between those powerful and beautiful peaceful mobilizations that took place in 2006 and the onslaught of immigration raids that ensued after those mobilizations. So whether the federal government planned it this way or not, I think it doesn't matter. The perception of immigration immigrant communities and immigrant leaders is that we've marched, we believed in the right of free speech. We appreciated the ability to take to the streets peacefully and asking for redress, but folks feel like, you know, we did that, you know, in 2006, and what we got as a result was neither immigration reform nor a solution to our issues, and what we only got was more raids, more deportations, more broken families. That is the general sentiment of immigrant communities, but I'll tell you something that I have seen, not just in San Diego, where I'm calling you from today, but in other parts of the country, is Occupy movements joining forces with immigrant leaders and labor unions saying, you know, we're part of the 99%. I think that this message of it's not just an issue about immigrants anymore, it's just an issue about all working people in this country, and if we just work together, if we learn to work together, mobilize together, demand justice and dignity together, that our voices become that much more powerful. And I have seen immigrant leaders who were very concerned about mobilizing the immigrant community now saying thank you to the Occupy movement, thank you to the labor unions, thank you to the faith leaders who are saying we're standing with you, we're also taking the streets, we're also demanding justice and dignity, we're also part of the 99%. And I think it's been difficult for us to sort of, you know, learn this new language of the 99% as immigrant rights leaders, but it fits well. I think it describes us appropriately as immigrants in this country, and it is a powerful thing to see of all folks coming together, and it's kind of happening again tomorrow on May 1st across this great nation. Folks will be taken to the streets again, and there will be no difference between immigrants and non-immigrants, Latinos or African Americans. I think folks are taken to the streets together, demanding justice, demanding dignity. And I think it's just a matter of time before we are able to be proud of our government again and know that we are standing on the right side of history.
Well, Christian, it's been great talking with you tonight. Got a lot of important information, and I'll just repeat the web address you mentioned earlier to get a lot of information that is really not out there in the corporate media, and that's bringjusticehome.us. Is that right?
That's right.
bringjusticehome.us. So if people want some details on what was discussed here tonight, they should go there. And thank you for all your important work and for spending time with us tonight, Christian.
It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christian. Bye-bye. That's Christian Ramirez, director of the Southern Border Communities Coalition. Again, bringjusticehome.us.